Oh, yours.
Oh, goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Bridget. I'm a queer, gender queer person in recovery, and it's good to be part of this meeting. Thanks, Marcia, for really, and your mom too, for helping hatch this idea. And remember when you first started talking about it, and it was a really cool thing, cool idea. And so, yeah, this is the third installment and final installment of Rainbow Recovery. And I understand that we have a few speakers today. I haven't hosted Saturday in a long time, so I feel very nervous right now. anyway, it's good to be here. I'm glad to be a part of this series of meetings. I've been very kind of all throughout my life, kind of confused and weirded out by gender and sexuality and stuff like that. So I've been learning a lot more about it in recent years, and I enjoy hearing other people's stories because I can really identify. I'm a tomboy who reserves the right to be glamorous, and I fall somewhere close to a 2 on the Kinsey scale, and I will actually place a thing in the chat to explain what that means. But I don't really have a whole lot to say on this subject. I just wanted to kind of give you a brief introduction to myself. And it looks like, let's see, I guess I have to introduce the speakers. Yeah, I'm feeling like a rookie right now. I'm a little off too because I've been a little sick this week. Okay, so we have, it looks, our first speaker today is the lovely Marcia. Is that right? No, you're not the first speaker. Okay, so the main speaker, Nell and Bex.
Yeah, we're putting them reversed, and sorry that I neglected to fill you in on this, but I had an emergency with my stepdad that I had to deal with, so that's why I wasn't present. So the main speaker is going to go first, and I will wrap up the event. So thank you for your patience. We ought never be organized. Bridget, you're fucking awesome. There
Okay.
we go.
All right. Jackson, now you have the floor. Thanks for letting me be of service.
We have to go. Oh, okay. It's us. hi, everyone. My name is Bex. I'm an alcoholic. My pronouns are they, them, and I identify as queer and non-binary. I still don't have a handle on what we're supposed to talk about, so I guess we'll just talk about recovery and gender and all that stuff. I'll let Nell introduce themselves, and then I guess I'm gonna talk a bit more.
Kia ora, everyone. I'm Nell. I'm an alcoholic, and I am also non-binary and queer, and grateful to be sober today, and glad that we have been offered this opportunity to be at the meeting with you. And thank you, Bridget, for what you said about being, I mean, I know you said you've been sick. I'm sorry for that, but that you're a bit off or something. Because I'm so glad to be at this meeting because I just feel fucking off. And so that's a really good time to be at a meeting. So I want to be able to share positive stuff, but it was so good to hear that profanity is allowed because there may be some from me anyway.
So in the moment, we are in the process of moving from New Zealand to the US. While we're in the US at the moment, we've landed a couple weeks ago, and we're doing a big road trip and ending up in Montana. And it's actually really quite cool to be in a meeting on the same day as everyone else. So that's fun. Anyway, I guess I'll just tell a little bit of my story in relation to alcoholism and sexuality and gender. I'll let Nell do the same, and then we can talk about some of the things in Alcoholics Anonymous that have been frustrating and hard in this regard.
Can I just say something?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I just wanted to say we don't always dress like matchy-matchy like this, but we're going to a wedding shower. Someone in Bex's family, it's an extremely heteronormative religious event, and so we decided to go matchy-matchy, and we're wearing our red Converse that we actually got married in with shorts. So that's always a good look.
Thank you for that. Anyway, gosh, I grew up in the 70s and 80s in a very religious, heteronormative, very strict gender roles sort of situation, and assigned female at birth, and I mean, I don't know how I identified, but at the time, as a small child, I didn't really feel like I was a girl. I didn't know if I was a boy, but I really looked up to my brother and tried to wear his clothes and play with his friends, which was tricky because he was 4.5 years older. So, like, nobody wants their, you know, little sibling tagging along with that age difference at that age. Maybe if I had actually been viewed as a boy, maybe it would be different. I don't know. But some fairly traditional concepts or messages about gender were instilled upon me. I don't remember ever hearing anything about gay or homosexual as a kid, but when I started to realize that I was attracted to girls, I kind of got the feeling that there was something wrong with that. And told myself it was just a phase. I don't know why. And I was also attracted to boys. But as far as the sexual or the gender part of it, I was somewhat of a tomboy, I guess, but I was kind of forced to have long hair and not always to wear dresses necessarily, but, you know, more girly looking pants, or, you know, boys' jeans had pockets and they were quite practical, but I didn't ever, you know, that's why I wanted to wear my brother's clothes. His pants were more cool, because they were more utilitarian. And anyway, that's, but I also find in my current self that it's really hard to talk about these things without using binary language. Like, there just isn't sort of, you know, what's a girl's outfit? What's a boy's outfit? I don't know. What's girl behavior? What's boy behavior? I don't know. But anyway, all of this stuff, especially at puberty, became really, I think internally quite difficult to sort of sort out. Plus, there was a lot of trauma in my growing up. And I think, you know, I'm realizing now there were probably a lot of things that went into it. The strict religious background, the belief that, you know, you could beat children in order to make them the way you wanted them to be, which turns out not to be the case, obviously. And being neurodivergent, I found out a few years ago I'm actually autistic, and I can see back to, you know, how that impacted, you know, my ability to kind of fit in with what I was supposed to do. And then I had an eating disorder, and I found alcohol at the age of 16 at a family gathering. I discovered what it could do for me. It was amazing. It made all the noise in my head stop. It made all the, you know, my ability to cope with the chaos in my family, because my grandmother was, you know, I loved her dearly, and she was pretty, I don't know, nuts, I guess. I don't like to use that term, but I can't really quite think of another word. I think my gender and sexuality had a lot to do with the kind of self-medicating that I was doing. As I got older, I left the church that I grew up in, or the, you know, the religious group, which actually, to be honest, did make me feel a little bit at sea, sort of spiritually, or, you know, identity wise. and just kind of made my way to try to explore what was happening. And when I finally decided, I guess, to come out as queer, it turns out that in the late 80s and early 90s in Baltimore, anyway, and probably most of the US, and, you know, talking to now other parts of the world too, if you're assigned female at birth and you identify as queer, pretty much the main option for you is that you're a lesbian. You know, if you're bisexual, well, you're just confused, you have to pick a side. If you're trans or gender queer was one thing, you know, butch femme, all that sort of thing, but I didn't identify as either one of those. So I was kind of an androgynous lesbian, I guess. But it didn't always sort of fit. But the other thing is that alcohol was a big part of getting to know myself and fitting into queer communities as well. And all of this is to say that I spent a lot of my life kind of hiding or burying who I was as a person, whether it was trying to be straight when I wasn't, whether it was trying to be a girl when I wasn't, whether it was trying to be a lesbian when I wasn't, whatever. And so I ended up, I mean, to try to shorten this part of the story, I guess, a little bit, in the late 90s, when I finally came out to my parents, that didn't go well at all. And a lot of this like PTSD kind of stuff started happening, and I drank more to, just try to get rid of the voices and the flashbacks and the anxiety, and got to a point where I was seriously suicidal and ended up hospitalized in a psych hospital, and did eventually get sober. I got to AA after a few months of being in the hospital. I had gone to some AA meetings, and I was really we're turning some lights on. I was really taken aback and put off by the gendered language in the big book. And this is part of our story in the more current setting, because it hasn't changed, obviously. And couldn't believe that, particularly that women in Alcoholics Anonymous could actually like relate to the male gendered language. I didn't really understand being non-binary at the time. It wasn't a term that anybody used. That came later. And actually that came when one of my brother's children came out as non-binary about 7-8 years ago, something like that. I was like, oh, that's how I've always felt. But anyway, I ended up making it to AA, and my first home group was actually a queer meeting in Portland, Maine, which was really helpful because it did help me to kind of relate how my identity, such as it was at the time, because it's evolved since then, related to my drinking, to my addiction, to my recovery. And it was really helpful because I'd go to these other meetings and, you know, they'd talk about, you know, it was all about men sponsoring men and women sponsoring women. And I didn't really quite understand where you'd fit in that. I mean, the point was very heteronormative, obviously, as we know, you know, they don't want to have you have any romantic entanglements with your sponsor, but, what do you do if you're bisexual? What do you do if you're, genderqueer? What do you do? You know, all of that, And none of that made any sense. And having people talk about how they didn't believe in special interest meetings. If you were agnostic or atheist, like it was like you were the, I don't know, like I would, you know, hear first I'd hear, this is a spiritual program, not a religious program. You don't have to believe in any particular God. It's God of our understanding. And then there was a chapter about the agnostic, which always ends up with, you know, some of us started out as agnostics, but we ended up believing in God. And there was, you know, I, I went to meetings where, you know, people who were atheist or agnostic actually got, you know, yelled at by other people, like, or you're not mm-hmm. going to stay sober. And I don't know if I identify as an atheist or an agnostic, or, you know, I do believe in something. So I guess I'm, you know, that, and I use God as kind of a code word for it sometimes, cause it's easier. Cause I can't explain it. I don't know what it is, but anyway, so there was that. And then there was like, you know, we don't need gay and lesbian meetings or LGBTQ meetings. There wasn't sort of the whole alphabet. I mean, the T even has been a long time coming in this, you know, definitely the B took a while. you know, at that time, queer was a bad word. So, and the plus, well, forget that. And like, what else was there? But anyway, the special interest meetings, the people who usually said we don't want to go to special interest meetings were straight men. You know, we don't need women's meetings, we don't need gay and lesbian meetings, we don't need atheist meetings, you know, whatever. But I did have some queer friends who also didn't really think that was necessary, and I felt like, well, it is for me. I mean, I went to a roundup in Provincetown when I was in my first year. It was a completely queer, it was like 1,000 people in recovery who were queer. And it was amazing because I could actually tell the parts of my story that I couldn't tell at other meetings. It's a little bit easier now to tell more of my story, but even so, especially after realizing that I'm actually non-binary, I mean, we've gotten into some crazy shit with people in New Zealand, and I'm sure it's happened in the US too, about the language and whatnot. So other parts of my life, I ended up in a relationship with a woman when I was about a year sober. And I think, oh, you know, I shouldn't have done that. I was at a meeting last night where somebody talked about making bad decisions in early sobriety. And the thing is, if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have my kid. I wouldn't have eventually ended up doing all the self-reflection and, you know, deep work that I needed to do. And I wouldn't have met Nell. I stayed sober through the whole time, even though it was incredibly difficult. And I did that by throwing myself into step work and working the program. And so I think I benefited from that quite a lot. And I was in that relationship for about 15 years. We moved to New Zealand. My ex and my kid, who actually identifies as non-binary as well, and is 16 now, moved back to Montana. And then the pandemic happened, and we couldn't see them for 2.5 years. So that's why we've decided to move here. So I did a really, really major fourth step the year after I separated from my ex, which really helped me to get and a lot of other soul searching to get more clarity about my sexuality and my gender, and also about what I might look for in a partner should I ever find myself in that situation, which basically I kind of made a mental list of all the criteria and figured that person never existed. They were like, you know, the unicorn or whatever. And so I put that aside and thought, phew, I don't have to worry about that. I can just be happily myself, you know, live on my own, do my thing. Not very long after that thought, probably 6 months or so, I guess, I went to a convention, a national convention in New Zealand, and one of the first speakers was Nell, and it was kind of this love at first sight sort of thing. And yeah, anyway, but one of the things is, I mean, Nell met all the criteria. Nell was in recovery. I mean, that was number one. I wanted to be with somebody in recovery. And I think how that came about was because my ex-partner just sort of didn't have any kind of program, and was just, I went to a meeting one time and I said, I need a program for people who live with people who need a program. And somebody told me that was Al-Anon. And, you know, I went to Al-Anon a bit, but I've never actually lived with somebody who was actively drinking or using, so I felt like I didn't quite fit in there. But I now live with a recovering alcoholic, and we definitely have our, you know, craziness that we have to navigate. But yeah, so now Nell was also in this place of exploration of gender and sexuality, and it's been pretty awesome, you know, to navigate that together, and also to go to meetings together and say our prayers to our higher power of our non-understanding, you know, and to have a, you know, sense of like asking for help, you know, to know that there's something outside of ourselves, even if it's all you guys. I mean, that's a big thing, is that we're supported by millions of people around the world. And with the pandemic, we've been able to meet many of you I see on the screen that I would have never met before. And some of you we're going to see in person. and hey, Liam, on this road trip. So that's really cool, because how would that have happened if it hadn't been for this pandemic? So I think one of the things that was on the list of things Marcia mentioned talking about, which was kind of broad, was family and identity. And we both have children. As I said, I have a 16-year-old who identifies as non-binary and pansexual, I think, which is interesting, because I actually think my ex is one of those lesbian TERFs. I don't know. I tread lightly in saying that word because some people find it really offensive, but isn't really sort of on board, and probably, I don't know this for sure, probably thinks I've just gone off the deep end. Interestingly, so do my parents. So that's the whole thing about this, you know, the strange bedfellows, or whatever, that they're sort of on the same page with that regard, in that regard. But anyway, I'm really going off the track here. It's been a bit of a journey with the kids, and kind of trying to accept this part of our identity, I suppose. And then I went a bit further with it and started hormones and had top surgery. And a lot, you know, in this binary world, I either present as female, especially if I shave off the facial hair, or I present as male if I have the facial hair. And it's like one or the other. And people just can't sort of, you know, get their heads around they, them pronouns, especially at our age. Like, you know, we're in our 50s, and the young people are all across it. But yeah, everybody else, I don't know. So I might let Nell talk, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the bumps we've hit in AA as well. Like, that might be something you can talk about if you want, or we can.
Sure.
Trade off.
Sure thing.
So anyway, thank you, Bex. I don't know if I just stop that in the middle or if that's enough, but
sure, we can resume. You can resume.
Okay.
Well, go ahead. Kia ora again. I'm Nell. I'm an alcoholic, and please excuse me doing lots of yawning. I feel so tired. Like, we've been doing all this driving, and I just think it does sort of add up after a while. You get a bit tired when you're just driving day after day. I think we've done over 3,000 miles so far. And yeah, but maybe the whole thing is just a bit tiring, you know, moving countries. But yeah, so I was really glad that we had this meeting to come to, because we just got, speaking of gender binary, we just got off the phone from Bank of America. What a fucking shit show that bank is. I'm sorry, but I come from New Zealand. It's this country of 5 million, and we have a superb banking system. You know, like, we're actually in the current century. This guy, he said to me to get me to have authorization for the credit card, because I've been through Debtors Anonymous, you know, like, I track all of our spending. I am the accountant for the family, and yet I'm now with a bank that will not give me access to the transactions. So I am reliant on Bex for, you know, telling me everything. But plus, you have to have a credit card. You have to have a credit card in this country to, like, get anywhere. I mean, I went through Debtors Anonymous. I don't have a credit card. I don't want to have debt. Anyway, and Oh, I've just forgotten my train of thought now. Oh,
the guy on the phone who was...
Yeah, what did he say? Oh, yeah. Yeah, so he starts talking about my partner and he... And I just go along with it now. I'm just like, yep, he's gone down to get ice. He'll be back. Yes, he can verify his identity. And then, so then I become she. So it's he and she. And I had already said to him at the start of the call, you know, you can call me, please call me Nell, because I'm non-binary, so I don't identify with ma'am. But, yeah, people don't get it. So, yeah, so then Bex comes back and he starts talking to, you know, Mr. Canner, and then Bex said, well, it's Dr. Canner. And then suddenly he calls Bex ma'am. I don't know why, because of the voice. I mean, honestly, that's why I'm so glad to be sober, because if I wasn't sober, I would have just blown a gasket at that person. As it was, I did become a little passag, and like in a, you know, hopefully in a way that wasn't discernible, but I do like start speaking very sort of slowly and deliberately. And at the end I said, ta-ra. That's the worst it gets now. Bex said, well, what does ta-ra mean? And I said, I don't know. It's the thing I picked up in the UK, but it's something I say when I'm really fucked off instead of goodbye. So yeah, that's the state in which I come to this meeting. I'm a much nicer person. It's probably hard to believe, but I'm a much nicer person as a sober person. I guess when I was drinking, which I did up until my late 30s, with a couple of breaks to have a couple of kids, I did try to be a nice person, but I didn't see any harm in getting angry about stuff and having that sort of righteous, justifiable anger. And I still battle with that in sobriety. I battle with, I do battle. Yeah, let's be honest. I have had some anger on this trip, and I'm just really glad that I haven't picked up a drink, you know, because I'm sorry to say, but after being, this is my 14th year of sobriety, I have actually had the feeling of wanting to get out of it on this trip. You know, when we went to Los Angeles, everyone was smoking weed all around us. And I had this insane thought of like, oh, I could smoke weed. Other people do. And, you know, that's not alcohol. I mean, I'm not going to do it. It's just the thought that comes in. And just before, when I was sitting, because we've been staying in all these Motel Sixes, which has been great. I mean, it's also been interesting. You know, not necessarily sort of using that word as a euphemism, but it's been great and an eye-opener. But I was sitting here, because from where I'm sitting now, I can look out the door and I can see a freeway, and there's like all these cars just going like that, which is not something that you see in New Zealand. And I had this thought of like, oh, I could just sit out there later and like have a cigarette. You see, I gave up smoking when I gave up drinking, so it's never going to be good if I start smoking again. Yeah, so I don't know. There's so many thoughts in my head. Like, the whole Bex mentioned about it being a journey with our gender. You know, the kids, I think you said something like it's been a journey with our kids. I wasn't quite sure what you were meaning by that. But, well, I mean, my kids have just accepted my identification as gender non-binary.
There were some bumps at first, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, I sort of don't really register that, to be honest.
It didn't take long.
Yeah, I mean, my younger girl is 15. My older girl is 23. They've both gripped it up pretty much. The older girl, when I said I was going to have top surgery, she felt a bit strange about that, I think, which is, you know, understandable. It's just interesting being in, I mean, in Wellington, where we lived in New Zealand, I was a lot more, sorry, we're just having a little interruption here. Yeah, the kids are asking us for some toothpaste. I was a lot more, assertive about being non-binary, And I would just tell people, my pronoun is they, my pronoun is they, Bex's pronoun is they, you know. But here, I sort of feel like I haven't got necessarily the energy for it. Bex is okay with being called he. And so I've just started going along with it. Because yeah. I can't be fucked. I mean, people just can't, they just can't fucking get it. And so, yeah, I don't know. That's quite weird. I did think this morning, gosh, I must write a gratitude list, because I know, you know, there are really key things I've learned in sobriety. One of them is about meditation, which I have not been doing. We have brought our Shakti mats with us on this road trip, and they have just been rolled up in the car. We haven't laid them out. Like, typically we might lay them out in our bed and just do some meditation. We haven't been doing that. A gratitude list, I know that's a really good thing, and I thought about doing one this morning, because I, you know, I worry that if I stay in this kind of groove of that I'll just get really down in the dumps, and drinking will seem like an option. And yeah, I don't want to go to that place. So yeah, I guess when I got sober, drinking had stopped working for me. And by that I mean it wasn't giving me the ease and comfort that it had given me in earlier years. And I just think it would, there's no ease and comfort that I would obtain through drinking now. It's just that I feel really discombobulated, and like, what am I doing here? Like, it was my idea to move to America, and now I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, like, we've got this beat up old car. Do you know that little things make me happy? Like, I am so happy to look out the window of this motel and see the car in the shade. I never thought I'd feel so happy to have shade for my car, because in New Zealand, we don't have heat. It's just, you know, I mean, people moan about the weather. They just don't know. They don't know how good they've got it. So, yeah, we've got this clunker of a car, which we've, you know, spent thousands of dollars on fixing already. And we've got each other. And we've still got a bit of cash in the bank. So I guess, you know, and we've got sobriety. Yeah, and I mean, sorry, Bex has been so much more positive than me. I mean, I'm just feeling really weird. So, you know, I've had times, I don't know if I've had a time in my life where I felt like this, actually, because I guess since I got sober, I was living in the same town. Was able to, as I mentioned, I went to Debtors Anonymous as well. I went through Al-Anon. I did the 12 steps twice in Al-Anon and once in Debtors Anonymous. And I still practiced the principles of those programs to the best of my ability. I felt pretty kind of stable, you know, and my life got better and better. And then the most amazing thing happened. I met this person right here, and honestly, I just, it's something I never thought would happen. I never thought that I would actually meet someone who loved and cherished me for who I am, you know, and would accept me. I had terrible, terrible dysfunctional relationships with people that, you know, bless them, they did the best they could, but it was never going to work. You know, I spent years pushing shit uphill with other people, and it's not to say we don't have our ups and downs. Gosh, we certainly do, and we've had them on this trip, you know. We had a thing a couple of weeks ago where we were in the middle of, where were we? Arizona? Bex got out of the car, went and sat under a tree and said, just leave me here. I'll get a plane ticket and I'll fly back to New Zealand. I was like, gosh, that's, you know, Bex didn't even have any money on them. it's been testing, and especially with the kids, you know, that the kid that we came here for, whom we've not seen for a couple of years, you know, like re-cohering as a family. Yeah, it's, it's been challenging, but it's also been great. And when it can't, I just wanted to talk briefly about the higher power, which, you know, I really come and go with that. I mean, as Bex mentioned about, you know, that there's some, what are they called? Like dominant narratives, or, you know, there's like the canon in AA, like that there's, you know, you must do it this way. You must believe in God. You shouldn't take medication. You know, I've had big run-ins with people over medication, which I take, and I've had really bad consequences when I've stopped taking my medication. You know, because I've thought that it might be, one sponsor said to me, oh, I'm just worried that you're not living in the full sunlight of the spirit because you take antidepressants. and, you know, you shouldn't worry about small things like the literature. So what if it says he? So what if it says man everywhere? That means everyone. He means everyone. There have been times in AA in the last 2 years in particular where I've thought I cannot stay in AA because I just cannot roll with all of this stuff, you know, and I can't. I had to quit a service position in New Zealand. I was responsible for answering all the emails that came in through the AA website that, you know, people asking for help to get sober. And because I said that I would not quote the AA preamble, AA is a fellowship of men and women, that I would say it was a fellowship of people. By the way, this is after the decision had been made in America to change that word. Because I refused to say that I would say it was a fellowship of people, men and women, I had to quit. I had to quit the service position because even though whenever someone wrote in for help to get sober, I would never quote the preamble to them anyway, because what is someone that wants to get sober going to think of the preamble? They want to be talked to in human language, like, you know, what AA is about. Is it, I mean, yeah, so the reason I've stayed in AA, well, one, we belonged to a queer group in New Zealand, a queer online group, which sustained us through the pandemic. Two, I don't want to drink. Actually, sorry, one, I don't want to drink. One, I don't want to drink, and I don't want to go back to that life that I had, which, you know, wasn't really terrible. I was very fortunate. Nothing really terrible happened to me, but I don't want to go back to that because my life as a sober person has been the most sort of serene and content that, you know, I've had in my adult life. Or as a child and adolescent. And I want to keep having a chance of being as good a person as I can. And I feel like I have that when I try and do things the AA way, or just, yeah, you know, take a pause, be grateful, try and act well, try and be kind to other people, try and be of service. I don't always see that as it has to be service in AA. I try and just be of service in the world to others as I can. I don't want to be the director. I don't want to be the director of my own show. You know, it's not that I believe in this God up in the sky. I don't even know what I believe in, honestly. And sometimes I think, you know, if there is a God, what the fuck is God doing, you know, because everything's in such a fucking mess. But I do find when I hand things over and when I ask for guidance, I don't know who I'm asking it of, that things tend to go better. That if I, like in a moment of stress, if I say, please guide my thoughts and my actions, then I'm more likely to act well than if I don't do that, and if I just let myself go into a really negative groove. Yeah. So I'm really glad to be a sober parent. My daughter smokes marijuana, my one in New Zealand. She smokes marijuana every day, and She sees that as preferable to being an alcoholic. I see it as the same. She's addicted to her drug. I was addicted to mine. But I'm glad that I'm not drinking while she's going through her own thing, you know. And also that I can think, well, it's her journey, it's her life. I'm responsible for my side of the street. And as long as I keep that clear and I'm there for her, you know, as a parent, and I'm a calm, loving, stable presence, then that's the best thing I can be. And same for our other kids, you know, the younger ones. So I just feel like I've rambled on, honestly, and I'm sorry if I have rambled on and it's been really dull. I'm not myself, you know, has to be said. I think the heat kind of, we're just not used to it. New Zealanders aren't built for this. Lol.
I don't know. Should I say anything else?
Say something, please.
Say something.
Say something wise and wonderful.
I don't know. I mean, I was just thinking about, I mean, yeah, we were talking about this earlier, and Nelson, I'm not gonna all have, you know, positive rosy things to say about AA. And I feel the same. Like, I probably come across to a lot of people as being more chill. I think that's autism, actually. It's really hard for me to sort of express what's actually feeling inside. People who are autistic do have feelings and empathy, let me tell you, if you don't know. But we just don't always express the things. I guess the thing, you know, just to expand, the thing with AA is we actually went to battle about the preamble and about just how gender neutral language was important and why it was important to us. Noel Garrett gave a great speech at the assembly about, you know, Bill wouldn't have wanted anybody to be left out, and that people are put off by the way this language is. And I know there's a lot of objection to changing the big book and whatnot. And I can see that side, but it's kind of like superstition.
You know, we went to a meeting in Wellington. Like, we specifically went to their conscience group so that we could let them know that the preamble had been updated. And one guy was so angry, he was practically frothing at the mouth. He had to leave the meeting because he said we were just bringing up stuff that was completely peripheral and nothing to do with being sober. And all you need to do to be sober is go to AA and just, you know, be part of the group. It was really quite hilarious.
Go along with it.
But I couldn't go back to that meeting. You know, I just thought, well, I'm not going to spend time with these people. It doesn't feel safe.
Some old, presumably straight dude told us we couldn't use the word queer either. But
oh yeah.
Anyway, but we were definitely queer. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about this that can be tricky. You know, being read as a straight couple, like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't come out 30 years ago to, you know, suddenly be back in the closet. But yeah, so the thing is that the positive side is that there have been a lot of people in AA who have thanked us for speaking up, you know, in New Zealand. I mean, it is a small place, but, you know, people who, may be walking the same journey as us, or, you know, have trans, non-binary, queer kids or whatever, who aren't comfortable with the language. I mean, we're too old to give a fuck, really, about what people think, I guess. And I think that's also part of our program. You know, and what I have learned from Al-Anon is, you know, I don't give a fuck. It doesn't matter what other people think. I mean, you know, I'm just kind of stuttering here. Coming to Maryland, where I grew up, and my parents live here, and my parents are just completely off, you know, they're, you know, as I said, I mean, the last major interaction with my parents, my father just like bullied us and gave us this big lecture about how we'd gone further off the rails because of our embracing our gender identity. And last night we had dinner with them at the retirement community, and notably they didn't introduce us to any of their friends. I think, which is fine, because I was just dreading, like, how are they going to introduce us? But it's the first time they've met Nell in person. It is, I have to say, it's a really, it can feel like a really destabilizing thing. And we're planning to go to two meetings today, this one and an in-person one that I've been to before. The shower for my niece, who I think identifies as bisexual and is marrying a man, but is also still really in this religious sort of framework. And I think really, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure what the story is. She has at least a couple of older siblings who identify as non-binary, and one of whom has a partner who identifies as non-binary. And there's a lot of kind of this undertone of this is a very heteronormative kind of event that's going to be held at the retirement community, because there's a free venue for family members.
Where your parents live.
Where my parents live. And there's this whole family of queer young people. And it's really interesting. My parents, who, you know, have had to kind of come to, not my parents, my older brother, who's had to come to grips with, you know, these queer kids in his family. And then my parents, who can't get with the program, you know, they can't accept it, but they have to. And my father actually has made me a scapegoat. Like, somehow I'm supposed to, like, I'm at fault for all this. I'm supposed to be, you know, making this better. So what does that have to do with AA? Well, basically it's everything. Like, the same stuff that I drank over, you know, when I was a kid, is happening still, and I don't have to drink over it. And I have a way to deal with it. Like, you know, we're going to be late to the shower because of this meeting, which is awesome, but it's good to have an excuse. And also we can leave early if we want to. And, we are going to have a barbecue with one of my nibblings. That's, if you don't know, the gender neutral term for niece or nephew, with only those of us in the family who are cool and supportive. They really appreciate having us, you know, kind of as part of their life. And that I don't have to take on the blame of being, you know, my nibblings feel like, you know, I'm a lightning rod. I'm like a beacon of hope for them, rather than, you know, some kind of bad influence. They think I'm a good influence, which is crazy.
I just wanted to say something about not having to drink, because it is really good not having to drink over stuff. I mean, I spent a lot of time drinking over hurts and angers from my family of origin. And it's lovely not to have to do that now. And it's lovely not to have to do it over someone else's family. Like, the last thing that Bex's mother said to us last night before we left was that they didn't know Motel 6 existed anymore, because they stopped staying in it when it became overrun with prostitutes and drug dealers. And, you know, my daughter is actually a sex worker, and I applaud her for that. And instead of, you know, going into some angry diatribe or just flouncing off, I said, well, everyone has to make a living, and they don't bother us. Which I probably could have been more articulate, and, you know, but you know, this is the kind of people we're dealing with. Jeez, how Christian is that? anyway,
I guess the whole thing that's on my mind today is gratitude. I'm grateful for how this program has helped me and us, I guess, to come to terms with our identity, and is helping us to just live in the world with all its ups and downs without having to annihilate our own brains and our, you know, and that we can show up and be good people for those of us in our family who, you know, need that.
Yeah, you know, and I just remembered something that from the book, because, you know, let's face it, there are a few helpful things in the book. In the big book, and one of them I remember is about trying to pack into the stream of life rather than take. And it's at events like this, yeah, I mean, I'm going to say that to myself as we drive to it, like, please help me to give and pack into the flow of this event, loving good stuff. You know, it's not about me. It's not about whether I have a good time. I'll just do what I can to be pleasant and be helpful. And yeah. I mean, I don't mean to diss all of the AA program or the Big Book or whatever. You know, there is heaps of helpful stuff in there from which I've benefited. I'm just really grateful that when I got sober at the age of 38, I'm now nearly 52, I wasn't identifying as gender non-binary, because I would have found that incredibly hard. I'm glad that at the time I identified as a woman, I was fine with that. Okay, you know, I'd always had some stuff with my gender, but when I was growing up, gender non-binary wasn't a thing. We didn't have the options. You were just, you know, you just had to be a girl, basically. And I wasn't creative enough or brave enough to make my own gender. If I was coming into AA now, geez, I don't know if I would get sober, because so off-putting. And I just think for all the people that must grapple with getting sober because of the language. However, there are some really good things in the books, in the literature, and, you know, good sayings, like some of those sayings that are on the cards, you know, in that archaic sort of scrolly writing, like live and let live, easy does it. I don't know about the think, because sometimes I think it's good just not to think, but, you know, there's some helpful stuff, and I'm glad AA is still going. I do think it needs a major refit. But I guess, you know, as long as it keeps going, it's got the chance to get refurbished and, you know, be more attractive to more people.
Cool. Oh gosh, we've spoken for a long time, and I think we should stop there.
I agree.
Thank you all for listening to our ramble.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having us.
We need to go soon.
Thank you, Nell and Bex. It was fascinating and just awesome to hear you all speak. And so many things jumped out, and it was just great to hear you. And thank you for highlighting that sex work is work. I think that was very important. And leave whenever you need to. I understand you have obligations today, but just thank you so much for your service today and your message. Okay, so it looks like we now have our other speaker, who hopefully has gotten herself prepared and is ready to share her story. Our lovely organizer and creator of this event, Marsha.
Lovely. I'm not sure if I'm lovely today. Hey, family. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. My problem is Marsha. And so thank you very much, Bex and Nell, for your share. I'd also like to thank all the others that have been involved with this this series so far. So that would include Xander and Juliana, Tracy C. I can't remember the gentleman's name. It was the very first, Corey spoke, and his last name is with a B.
Matt.
Matt, that's it. There you go.
And Stephanie.
And Matt and Stephanie being involved in this. It's been really interesting learning about all these different things. And it's the different things that are within the community that I'm supposed to be in. Well, not supposed to be in the community that I'm in. But I can honestly say when my mother asked me that question, you know, what do all those letters stand for anyways? I was like, damned if I know. I am from, like, I came out when I was 18, well, 19. And I wasn't one of those, let's quietly sneak out of the closet and just, you know, kind of walk around quietly. And, you know, I like blew the closet doors off when I figured out who I was. And it wasn't, this is not one of those things that is a choice, because my mom would always say, you know, this is your choice. And no, this is not my choice. This is who I am. You know, some things in life for me have been choices, but this was not one of them. And so, if we're looking at the letters that are represented for this one, it was LGBTQP2S+ straight allies. So lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, pansexual, two-spirited, plus includes all of the other things in there along the gender fluidity and the non-binary and all of those things. I always thought that the plus was for the supporters and allies, but it's not. The plus includes all the other genders that are in there. And then there's the straight allies. And I think we've managed to, within one person, we can get so many of those different labels that are there. So if I were to look at these labels and see where I fit in, I am a lesbian. And I think it's like, that's not a common thing anymore. You know, it's like we're being sourced out by with all the other labels that are coming in. And somebody asked me just recently, you know, and I said, I'm Marcia. but they wanted the label to come out. They wanted the label to come out. And I said, well, I guess if I were to pick one, I'd be a lesbian. And they said, and what? There's no other, I don't attach anything else with that, you know, the definition that they have there. Lesbian is a woman who's emotionally and socially, mentally, all of that attracted to another woman. And that's the way it has been for me. And how does that tie into with sobriety? Well, it doesn't. It didn't tie into sobriety. I didn't think that there was possible for people to get clean and sober within within the gay community. So when I came out at 19, my mother called me home. I was living with a partner that I just recently gotten together with, and she called me home to tell me that it was okay for people to be gay, but Black people can't be gay. And I thought that was quite interesting. And then we proceeded to have the conversation of the fact that this was just a phase that I was going through, and that I would, you know, I would eventually outgrow it. And I don't think so much. So I'm talking to a very Christian woman, and my mom is born again Christian in every single way you could possibly think of. Yes, I do have religious trauma and all of those things, and I'm not going to get into it, all of that. But you know, my mother had said to me, you know, you're going to be lonely for the rest of your life. And you know, when it comes to these the labels and everything like that, that I'm not too keen on labels. But I know that there's a benefit. There's certain labels that I'm very proud of, and I'm okay with that. Yeah, it gets confusing with me, you know, just like all the letters in the community. It gets confusing to me. Sometimes I don't know which way is up and which way is down. And, you know, I was just getting into the height of my drinking and drugging, when I was out, and being in the community, I didn't know which way to go. And, you know, when I came out, we had you know, Pride Day. You know, it was Gay Pride Day. And shortly after that, it became Gay Pride Day. But Saturday was the Dyke March happened. And that's when the women had their day. And then, you know, that was Gay Pride Day. And then eventually the Friday became the Trans Day. And so it was Trans Day. And then there was the Women's Day. And then there was the Gay Pride thing. And it just kept, the community just kept separating and separating and separating. And it didn't make any sense to me at all. You know, because there's so many struggles and frustrations and things like that that are going on out there, yet the community just keeps dividing itself and dividing itself and dividing itself. And that's exactly what I also experienced coming into AA. You know, when you look at the traditional versus the secular, but within secular, there's so many different categories that are in there. And I understand that, you know, I identify, and, you know, women need to have women's meeting and men need to have men's meetings and all that. I can see the big picture of all of that. When it comes right down to it, sometimes I see them as all these things as barriers. And sometimes I can get really like down about that, you know. I didn't understand as I watched the gay community separate itself. And sometimes I don't understand as I watched the recovery communities separate themselves. You know, I just want to be sober. I want to be sober. I want to be clean. I want to be sober. I want to be with people that helped me on my journey. But this is all just so confusing. And I don't know if anybody else feels that way with what's going on. But I mean, like trying to figure out my ass from my elbow when it comes to how the hell do I stay sober one more time? And now you want to put a label on top of all of those things, you know. And I've got a couple of struggles going on when it comes to the whole identifying and everything like that. You know, there's the BIPOC community, and you know, again, a lot of trauma and everything like that. That's a community that I would, you know, kind of sort of stay clear of. You know, I would do a lot of fighting for women's rights, and I do a lot of standing up for the LGBT. But I wasn't too keen on the BIPOC thing. And this is I'm learning about it now that I'm, you know, now that there's a lot of different meetings that are popping up and stuff like that. But it's weird. It's weird and it's uncomfortable. And I know that I'm all over the place, and I'm just speaking like what's going on within here right now. I don't want to be a divided person. I don't want to be the labels. I don't want to be any of those things. I just want to be me, and I want to be free to love who I love. And I try and conduct myself that way. I do my best. But sometimes, you know, conversations become unavoidable. I get asked different questions. What's it like being a Black person in recovery? I was put on a panel when I first came in, and that was a question that was asked. You know, my panel question was, where do you fit into a male, Caucasian, heterosexual, God-based fellowship? Why do I gotta look at all those things, you know? I'm very, very happy for people to be who they are and use whatever label it is that you need to use for yourself. There's a lot of work involved in trying to figure out what all these things are, though. You know, even after doing this is the third part of this series, and I can be honest with you that I'm still not 100% sure what some of these what some of the letters stand for. You know, what exactly is a queer person? What exactly is a pansexual person? What exactly, you know, makes this different from this one? I'm still really confused. But what I can say about all this is, since we've started doing this series, I have met people that you know, openly identify in those categories, and I'm learning about it. And that's quite incredible. I'm learning about how to navigate through all of this and stay sober at the same time. You know, I don't know if I've touched on anything that I had going through my head at all. You know, all I know is I'm proud to be part of the LGBT community. I've never hidden who I am or anything like that. I don't hide the fact that I am an alcoholic or an addict. This program, the 12 steps, the way I've interpreted them for me, because this is Marsha's recovery that I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about Bill and Bob's recovery. You know, I'm not a 30-something stockbroker or ass doctor, or, you know, is growing up in the 30s, right? This is like 2022, and I'm a Black woman, and I'm becoming very proud of that. I'm proud of who I am, right? But if you want to break it down in labels and all of that stuff, right, as a person of color, Black woman, whatever you want to use, I'm becoming comfortable within my skin when it comes to that. I'm a proud woman. I'm very honored to be a woman. I think women are beautiful, absolutely. Well, men are too, but you know, as part of the LGBT community, I'm very proud to be part of such a diverse group of people that have opened up my eyes to so many different things, just about life and love in general and all that stuff, you know. I'm a tam proud alcoholic, you know. I'm an addict as well, you know. I'm learning that I'm codependent. Yeah, those are a lot of different labels, you know, but underneath all of that, I'm Marcia, just a person that's trying to learn a little bit more about who I am and how I fit into this world, one step at a time, one day at a time. And I have all of you all to help me out with it. And that's pretty cool. That really is pretty cool. So I do want to thank everybody for being here and taking the time to come out and listen. And you know, I would love to be able to continue doing little series like these. And I'm gonna put it out there and give a little warning. The next thing that I want to do is I want to do the old gays. I did not say old days, as in the back in the day. No, we're going to do the old gays. There are some people within the LGBT community right here, right, of the older generation that I learn so much from every day, and I want to learn so much more. I want to know what it's like to have gotten sober in 1969, knowing that you're an atheist and a lesbian. I want to know what that was like. I want to know the different stories that went on. And just like when in our community, I learned about Stonewall and what we stood for and everything like that. And now I want to learn about what it was like for people that came before me. Yeah. So, and if anybody's ever got any ideas about any things that they want to do, right, just put your ideas forward. Find a group that will let you use their platform. And put it out there, because that's the amazing thing about the free thinkers and all that stuff. You know, we talk about those things that bother us. Nothing is an outside issue. There's absolutely nothing on this planet that is an outside issue, because if it affects me and my sobriety, then it's an issue that I need to talk about. And that's not an outside issue. That's not. So thanks very much. I do love you all. I always say, keep your head out of your butt and keep doing the next right thing. Yeah, so that's it for me. So I'm going to turn it back over to Bridget, a huge part of my recovery circle. And thank you, Xander, and Megan, and everybody else who's here. And Mark's really annoying. You know, he's like, take an idea. And he's like, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do it? You know, I'm very happy to know him, cause he keeps my service bug going. So thank you, Mark, and to Snua and all of you. And I hope you all have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you, Marcia. Great to hear from you. Great to hear more about your story. And so are we going to open up the floor, or are we closing out, or just